It was the garage.
My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive into drinking if you don't stop driving.
That's a funny car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it. I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes paid for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Big trouble. That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith, the big one in the trouble trial.
Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Throwing Wrenches Podcast. I'm Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott, and this is Automotive Podcast 2019.
How do you like that for a catchphrase, Daryl?
I like that. Were you inspired by somebody?
I was. Well, here's the deal. If Ford versus Ferrari can use a title like Le Mans 66, then I think that we should be able to use a functional and simple title like Automotive Podcast 2019. Now, if I said it with a little bit of a French flair, I think, does it have a little bit?
Very European. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think we could go with that one?
I think so. You might have to wear a beret and some like Ray-Bans or something.
Some snaps.
Yeah. Perhaps. We are still working on the catchphrase.
We're going to get there someday. Someday when we're just going to nail one and we'll be like, that's it. It's going to be like an old shoe, right?
You're bound to have something stick after 25 episodes.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
This is episode number 25, by the way. So we're a quarter of the way to 100 episodes. We're not going to have the confetti in a party just yet.
Oh, we might. There might be a parade in Peoria. You never know.
There might. We could definitely line up all the cars in the fleet, I guess, and have a parade. But nobody would really care.
Between you and I, we could have a mini parade.
We could. I still got some leftover Halloween candy that hasn't been eaten yet. So.
And you bring it over?
I did not. You like Tootsie Rolls?
No, that isn't Halloween candy. See, that's parade candy.
That's what my wife is like. This is the worst. Like, why did you pick this? I'm like, because I can get 3 pounds for
that's
like 7 cents.
Kids just, you know, they give it to their parents.
Old timey.
Yeah. I mean, this is what happens. Kids get home and the parents are like, all right, can I have some of your candy? And the kids look in their bag and they're like, hand you a Tootsie Roll because that's the crap that pulls out the crowns and it's terrible and nobody wants it. So
yeah, we're old. Anyways. I'd like to say a quick thank you to some of our sponsors. Eric's getting ready to do that.
Oh, yeah. I always got to talk about the Casey Law Office. You know Gabe Casey?
Oh, yeah.
Casey Law Office can be found at clopeoria.com. Gabe Casey is our super driving, super lawyer, and he's practiced in consumer law, malpractice, wills, trusts, and estates, workers' compensation, contract law, and general practice. And he's just generally a great guy. So if you have any legal problems, any legal ills, as it may be, Gabe Casey is your guy, clopeoria.com.
I also would like to say a quick thank you to Fort's Toyota of Pekin. They are 15 minutes from anywhere, as they say, for sales, service, new, used. Even if it's Toyota or not Toyota, you can definitely take advantage of some of the services they offer. They are on the web at toyota-pekin.com. Check them out. Nice folks to do business with.
Yes. Thank you to our sponsors. We appreciate both Gabe Casey and Fort's Toyota Pekin. And disclaimer, I do work for Fort's Toyota Pekin. So if I sound a little partial, there's a reason.
That's right. We're also a member of the Peoria Podcast Alliance.
Yeah, we'll get that over with.
PeoriaPodcast.com. Check them out. And now to our semi-favorite part of the show.
So for those who don't know Daryl Scott, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. While you were sleeping last night, this guy was cruising the internet chat rooms talking about vehicle maintenance on his new ride.
True.
We'll get to that later. It's not enough to know 99% of all car knowledge, like Daryl does. Daryl knows that life is an ongoing class, and if he's not a student, you'll find him on Facebook in a Facebook car group teaching. That's our hero, Daryl Scott.
Thank you. I'm blushing right now. And if you don't know Eric Stahl, let me tell you a little something about this gentleman here. Some of us might sit at a desk all day at work. Some of us never come in contact with another living soul. Some of us fear interaction with others. And then there's Eric. He's the kind of guy who rolls his sleeves up and gets the job done. And he's not afraid to take a bite out of anything, really.
Crying.
He also likes to show off his rippling Popeye-like biceps.
Yeah.
He's Eric Stahl.
I think it's a tumor, actually.
I don't know. You got the Robin Williams hair going on. He played Popeye in a movie, didn't he?
He did. I like that movie.
That movie gets crapped on
all the time. It was Robert Altman, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the Shelley Duvall that everybody hated.
Yeah. She looked like olive oil.
Oh,
so,
Popeye.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to our nonsense. If you like the last couple of shows, we'll probably touch on some of the highlights here later in the program. But we appreciate all the support and the feedback. We had some comments on a couple posts we recently put up there, some antique.
We've had some neat stuff. Yeah. And please check that out. Some of the stuff is even podcast. What we posted up there last week was about 20 pictures of car dealerships from Pekin mm-hmm. from the 1950s. And I'm going to tell you what, man. People have never seen these pictures.
That's true.
Yeah. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, it was. And some of them, the buildings are still standing, so you can be like, oh, that used to be the Meineke or whatever. You can kind of pick up where things are today. It was fun.
That used to be the Ford dealership. That's crazy.
I had no idea. Very cool. So, if you see something you like, hear something you like, tell us about it and put it on Facebook, share it on your social media platforms du jour, and we appreciate you getting the words out.
Excellent. All right. Also, we need those Apple reviews, folks. I got like 5 Apple reviews, and that ain't getting it done. I think we have 7 ratings, and I know we got more than 7 listeners. I think we're up to a couple hundred at this point. So get on to iTunes. I was talking to Brian, the guy you met on the showroom floor at the dealership the other day. He's like, I don't even know how to listen to the podcast on iTunes. And I'm like, I wanted to take like these sheets of paper in my hand and just like smack them upside the head. I'm like, how do you function, man? You know.
Well, maybe he's not, I don't know, digital native, as they say.
Yeah, well, you could find the show on Spotify, but
Put a player. We've got a nice embedded player. You don't even have to. I'll throw this out here. I'm an Android guy.
Yeah.
Eric, what are you?
I'm an Apple guy, but my whole family's gone Android at this point.
Okay.
I'm the last holdout.
It doesn't matter what you have. We've got a platform for you. You can subscribe, or you can just go to the regular throwonwrenches.com and use the embedded player. You don't have to have any apps or anything like that. But the bottom line is, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
And we appreciate however you listen.
But we want the ratings. So.
Yeah, that too.
Now, I can tell you this also. I heard from no ends of conversation on my trip out to SEMA and some other stuff this last time that we should listen to the Truck Show podcast because Lightning and the other guy, one guy's in radio and the other guy's in the automotive industry and we're just like us, but more successful. And maybe we should put a guitar or sing some jingles of our own between segments. So okay. I'm just telling you, Daryl, if I pull out a guitar, I'm probably shamelessly stealing material from the Truck Show podcast.
If you pull out a do you play? Do you play at all?
No. Okay. But I can strum. I can pick up a chord, I think.
If you pull out a guitar, it's game over, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we need to get some musical guests.
If I start singing, it's game over. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe we'll take a hint.
All right. So also want to give a shout out to Toyota Trucks and Trails podcast. The episode's not released yet, but maybe by the time this show's out, Jason, the main host over there, and I did a Skype interview for about 90 minutes the other night. And, I think it might be boring to me and maybe to everybody else. I hate to be narcissistic about this, but it was really like, this is your life in Wheeling. You know, and
well, basically, that's cool though.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, what we did basically discover was I've done all this awesome stuff in 5 years that other people have been like wheeling their whole life and never done any of. So
someday I'll get to one of those events that you've done this year. Yeah. No, that's cool though. It means you're living life to the La Vida Locust.
I guess I'm definitely getting the presence out there. I'm making sure people know about the wheel and Pekin. So when that episode comes out, I'll be sure to share it on Facebook, and I'll probably throw it up there on the Throne Wrenches site, too.
Yeah, love to.
Daryl!
love it. Love it.
If he's not dropping the microphone, he's banging into something. This guy...
I think I just got electrocuted. I don't know if all this is up to code, Eric. I just want to throw that out there. All right. So, yeah, we'll be listening for that, and I actually can't wait to check it out.
All right. So now we move on to the... favorite section of the show, the project section, where we usually find out Daryl's got something broken and he's going to fix it himself, and where I usually have something broken, but I'm going to pay somebody else to do it.
You're a smarter man than I, sir. Yeah. So, SEMA, you touched on it earlier. What's going on? You actually spent a couple days out there in beautiful Las Vegas at the SEMA show.
Yeah, it's my second time out at SEMA. Fortunately, where I work at Fort's, the owner, Mr. Fort, said, let's go out there and check it out this year, and let's bring a technician and one of our parts guys.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we could get those guys are fresh faces. They've never done it before. You know, these guys are installing the accessories, they're buying the accessories, but they don't actually see what's going on out there in the industry. So Nate and Jamie went with me, along with Mr. Fort, and we spent 2 days grinding through this place. I'm going to tell you what, man.
Is it the big convention center out there?
Yeah, it's all of the convention center and the outside.
Yeah.
And It's so consuming. We did two straight days of walking.
And people are like, oh, what do you need to be out there 2 days, 3 days for?
We probably saw 60% of the show in the 2 days I was there.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you what, Jamie is a technician who's up on his feet all day. You know, he's working all day. He was gassed by the second day.
Yeah.
Mr. Fort was done. He's like, you know, he's...
My knees hurt. Yeah, everything hurts.
Yeah. He's like, no, that's it. Nate, yeah, he was done. And I still could have probably done another day if I had to, but it was rough. And I didn't get to any of the electronic stuff I wanted to. But what we did see is the outside presentations with all the big trucks and all the accessories on those. We saw the overlanding area, saw the rims and tires, which you can't even believe.
That's pretty
insane. Can't even believe the amount of tires that were brought over there. And now there's a lot of people buying stuff, so you'll have like unicorn tire from China that's there, and they're probably selling, you know, hundreds of thousands of tires with buyers who were there to try and make negotiations instead of having to do it overseas. They kind of meet face to face, you know, for the first time. But
they have like little meeting rooms set off to the side.
Yeah, on some of them. Yeah. You know, we were just there looking for casual accessories for Toyotas. And the Supra was the star of the show. They said 60 Supras were at the show, and I probably saw 50.
Yeah, we'll share up some of your pictures from SEMA if that's cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
There's a ton of beautifully done, I mean, everything from mild to wild Supras.
Yeah, and for as much crap as we've given that car over the last year, apparently the people on the East Coast and the West Coast, they don't care. They think the car is amazing. You know, there was no hate for that car. It's a driver's car, so... You know, they don't care what factory it's made at. They don't care, you know, what's necessarily under the hood. It's a beautiful car, and it's a tunable car. And we found some really neat accessories for it. So I was excited about the Supra when we left there. And as a matter of fact, we just sold our second Supra today. So
was that the black one?
No, it's a yellow one, actually.
Where'd the black one come from? There's a black one in the
show. Yeah, that one is in inventory.
Okay.
So we're trying to get one more so we can start putting some accessories on them. I'm looking forward to it, man. We're gonna rock and roll.
And by the way, for folks, stop in and check it out at Fort's, because right now they also have the 93
Mark IV twin turbo, all original.
And that puppy is mint. Folks at Detail Peoria, who we had on the show, did a wonderful job getting that thing.
13,000 miles on it. There was actually a Mark IV at SEMA. It was next to another Supra, a Mark V. And I got a picture of a woman like leaning on it, like with her hand on the mirror, and I'm like, oh god, this is why we have velvet ropes around ours.
Did you get a little heartburn?
Yeah, a little bit, but their car wasn't nearly as nice as the one Detail Peoria cleaned up for us. So,
but it's cool to see the juxtaposition, if you will, of the new Supra with that one, and some of the styling cues. When you look at it, the new one, you're like, I don't really kind of see some of the cues. When you see it next to an older one, you definitely pick up on it.
Dude,
very subtle.
Those rear fenders, I do believe those fat rear fenders, you know, are definitely a hallmark of that Mark IV that carried over the Mark V. And
gorgeous.
I don't care what anybody says, they can shove it, man.
They can kiss it.
Yeah.
So SEMA success.
Yeah.
Are you probably going to go back next year?
I didn't plan on it. You know, it just depends on the way the schedule works out. And if it works out for everybody, that's fine.
Seems earlier this year. Is it usually around Thanksgiving, I guess?
I cannot comment because I don't go. I've only been there twice now in five years. So I was happy to go. I don't know that you need to go every year. I don't know what value you would have every year unless there was something specifically going on you had to see. I think I lucked out 5 years ago because it was the year of the FRS, and when the BRZ came out, they were all over the show.
Sure.
This time I go, it's all Supras. I can tell you next year, it's going to be Broncos. There's going to be Broncos everywhere. There was more old Broncos in that building and outside.
No kidding.
Oh, people had redone them all over the place there in anticipation of the new Bronco coming out, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Some of the other things, too, and not to spend too much time on SEMA, because we'll put up some pictures and we'll share some blurbs on it. You documented that trip real nicely, because that's – anybody who goes on those things, first thing they want to do is spend a day and just take pictures of all the cool stuff. And then you get home, you're back in the hotel room, you're like, I don't even know what I saw. You got to go through your phone because you were like taking pictures all day. But let me ask you this. Any kind of the aftermarket industry has historically been a huge part of SEMA, but there's also a kind of a lobbying component in terms of I don't know if it's collector vehicle or the right to, if you will, hot rod your car. Was there some of that legislative action network
there were classes going on. I never had the time to do that.
Okay.
Actually, if you were one of the SEMA members, you could get in like almost 3 or 4 days earlier than we were there.
Oh,
and
wow.
I imagine that's when a lot of that conversation was had. There were classes about all kinds of things there, but I don't know how you could do it.
You'd almost have to book a week.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
No, saw some amazing stuff. And actually, if you don't know what SEMA is, I think it stands for Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association. And Google it. It's huge. You may not even know what's going on.
Yeah.
If you do know what's going on, you know it's kind of cool to be there. So I was quite thrilled.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you were, able to get out there.
Yeah. Other projects going on in my household. My son wrecked his promptly, beautifully Plastidip 4Runner last Monday. What was it? 25 degrees. It was sleeting. And yeah. I said to him before he left for school, I said, "Are you safe to drive?" And he goes, "Yeah, I drove on Halloween. It was fine." I'm like, "All right, well, be careful." And he got about 100 yards out of the driveway and did a 180 and took out a mailbox, broke the back window on his 4Runner.
Oh, brother.
I should have taken him to school. Angel wasn't home because it was Veterans Day and she was off because she's a state employee. So
he was okay, though, right?
He was fine. Truck got a broken window. The mailbox is trash. So walked up to the gentleman's drive. I drove home from work. I'd been gone for like 10 days to SEMA and Mojave Road and all this stuff.
Yeah, you had a whirlwind tour there.
Yeah, so I've been to work about 5 minutes. And my son calls me, "Dad, I wrecked my truck." I'm like, "You're kidding me, right?" "No. Well, summer's in college and mom's away.
You're up."
I had to drive all the way back to Mackinac. We walked up to the gentleman's house and told him, and he was super nice about it. So
that's I feel that's one of the benefits of living in the country, if you will. People are much more apt to be like, "Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
You can fix it, right?"
Yeah, the dude was like, "This is not the biggest deal." He just asked, he's like, "Is your son all right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he's all right." He's like, "Don't worry about it." And
That's nice.
So we went to Lowe's, got a new mailbox, and set that up on Saturday. We put concrete down and all that. So now the next time he hits it, it'll be even stronger, I think.
I was going to say, it's going to take out a bigger chunk. Okay, so this is the 4Runner that was plastidipped in that beautiful blue color
that we
talked about. Put some pictures up. How bad is it? Besides the window, I mean, structural stuff, quarters shot?
The back bumper got wrecked pretty bad, and that back window got knocked out. Regan had a good point. Just take some big suction cups and kind of pull the fender out.
Yeah.
Because it's not bad, but the Plastidip's kind of screwed up in that quarter. So, we're just going to have to get more Plastidip, Daryl.
You're going to have to do it again.
Yeah, on that quarter.
Lay it on real thick. Well, I'm glad everybody's all right. And like we talked, I think, offline about it's a good learning experience. It sucks because it always,
I did the same thing with my Velari, man. I think we told that story in the Christmas episode where I tapped the brakes to Pink Floyd and went spiraling out into a farmer's fence. And guess what? I didn't fix that farmer's fence, so it was karma for me to go fix this guy's mailbox, I think.
Oh, so it's payback from years ago.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, glad everybody's all right. Yeah. But, if you need a hand tracing some Harbor Freight suction cups down, let me know.
Yeah.
I did try that, and Regan, he's got a good point. I tried that on one vehicle years ago, and all it did was actually lift the paint off. It didn't pull the dent. It pulled the paint off of the panel. So,
well, this might pull the Plastidip, but I'm thinking otherwise. That metal's pretty thin on that 98 4Runner. I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll do fine.
Yeah. I had to get some mothballs and some zip ties because we had a mouse eat off an evap line on the Tundra. So
great.
I did that project myself without paying somebody.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that was great. And I can tell you what, man, you get a little bit of mothball on you for a project like that.
Yeah.
You almost got to take a shower to get that stuff out of there.
What is it, naphtha? There's some chemical in there that's the mothball smell.
Yeah.
AKA the grandpa's overcoat smell.
Yeah, it reeks.
Okay. So how are you going to get that out in the spring?
I don't, well, it's under, so I zip tied one up to the washer solvent tube.
Yeah.
And I zip tied another one underneath by the fuel tank bracket.
Okay.
So I got one under the car and one in the engine compartment. I'm hoping I'm covered.
I think you'll be all right.
I didn't put any in the cab.
Do you do any of the home remedies, like dryer sheets? Somebody said bars of soap one time.
Yeah, Irish Spring, that's always one they say. Yeah. The dryer sheets is one we always tell people at work to shove, like dryer sheets between all the narrow spots inside the engine compartment.
Yeah.
I could have tried that, but I was ready. I went full tilt with the mothballs.
You have no – when they start chewing wiring harnesses, that's a little – that's yeah. a different level.
Yeah, I've already sprayed gasoline all over everything under there, so none of it's tasty.
All right, so before SEMA, you did a little Mojave Desert run.
Yeah, and so I'm just going to refer people to the Forts Trail Team website, not that I want people to leave throwingwrenches.com, but I did do a blog post. On our way to Mojave Road, we had to drive – well, one of the 4Runners, it was a 2017 4Runner, drove all the way out from Illinois and got an oil leak, and I just about – just about fired a lube tech thinking he screwed up before they left. But come to find out the oil pressure sender was failing on it. On a 2017 with 60,000 miles, inexplicable. But you know what? It's an $8 part.
Yeah.
And it went bad, and I diagnosed it and kind of got it all kind of set up for a repair. We swung into a shop and paid a $100 fee for them to put it on, but I stopped at the O'Reilly and got everything all lined up in sequence so we could be like little downtime as possible. So
good.
So that was an interesting little story. Check that out on FortsTrailTeam.com.
We'll put a link up in the episode here. So.
Yeah, that's all my stuff. Sorry, Daryl. I feel like I'm a show.
No, hey, you've had a full month.
Yeah.
So are you never traveling for the rest of?
I'm done till March.
Year?
I'm done till March. I think in February I got to go to Vegas for like a 2-day work trip. But after that, it's a family vacation in March, and so I'm not doing anything.
Good. Good. Well, I mean, not good, but
no, I'm fine with that. My wife was ready to murder me after this last one.
She's like, "You are grounded." Yeah, I will say too. We used to do in a past life conventions out in Las Vegas all the time. Every year they'd have a big show and a National Association of Broadcasters show out at the same convention center.
Sure,
same thing. Radio, TV, streaming, whatever. It took forever to walk through that, but people always used to give me crap. Oh, you're going to Vegas for work, huh? Vegas. Here's why. Back in the day, people used to go to Chicago or St. Louis or some of the other bigger cities, and guess what? They started getting stupid expensive to have these conventions. So you can have, when a SEMA show is in full swing, or NAB show, or what's the other one? The Consumer Electronics Show.
Oh, yeah, that's there.
That's there. So when you go, and those used to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
That all used to be, CES used to be up at McCormick Place. They priced themselves out of the market, so everything moved to Las Vegas, and you can get a hotel room for $55-$65 bucks a night out in Vegas during those events. And
yeah, we didn't, but
I know, but you can, if you get it early enough, or sometimes they have deals. But that's why people go. And I used to get so much crap. You get to go to Vegas for work, and all you do is probably gamble and smoke and drink.
Oh, sure.
But I also like, never mind. I won't even go down that rabbit hole. But I will say that's why people go. The gambling, drinking, and everything else, that's always good.
You bring up
there.
A good point. They actually are expanding that convention center. They got like a whole skywalk thing and a whole other area that looks...
Seriously.
Oh, yeah, and it looks amazing. And I said, as we're walking up to it, I said, this is going to put McCormick Place out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the Javits Center in New York. Like all those big places, they don't fill them up
because
anymore.
If they're not going to get the gambling traffic, they might as well get the convention traffic, right?
Yeah. And that's another lure. People that are on the fence, like, oh, I really want to go to this conference. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And for me, it's not the gambling. It's the 6-egg omelet at the Peppermill restaurant.
Hey, I was at the Peppermill.
I saw.
Yeah.
I almost hit you up. I'm like, dude, get a mushroom.
Egg?
There was one that's a 5 or 6 egg omelet. Swear to God. Insane.
No, the Peppermill's great. I will say this, too. One last thing about SEMA.
Yeah.
The Hoonigan guys were there and some other guys. And so they have this little track set up outside, and they're just doing a smoke show out there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, man, this sounds amazing. You could smell the burning tires. You could just hear the raging, the rev limiters popping.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I want to get up close to this. Well, I never got up close to it because it was just so busy, and we were so tired. Just want to get on the bus back to the hotel.
Sure.
And I met some guys on the elevator who had, like, their eyes were black. You can see where their sunglasses had been. They're like, yeah, we went to the Hoonigan show, and we're right in front. And it's just, you could tell they've been pelted by just, like, rubber and smoke. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a bad idea to have front row at the Hoonigan show, right?
Yeah, they didn't have asthma to begin with, but they left with it.
They got black lung now. Daryl, it's enough about me. What is going on in the garage?
Well, I'm in the issue.
In the four-car garage.
Yes, I actually did squeeze all four quote-unquote collector vehicles into the garage for the winter. I had a 3-car garage with a little room on each side, and I did the Austin Powers thing. Instead of buying those little skates you put on the tires and then you can push cars around.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Those are nice, but I've heard you have to spend big money to get the good ones, because the cheap ones you get at Harbor Freight, they fall apart.
But Bork, he doesn't weigh that much. You can get the cheap ones there, right?
Yeah. The Volvo's pretty light, but at the same time, I got two giant cracks in my garage floor too, so here's what I would get it caught, and it would tick me off. So I did the Austin Powers thing where I moved it, you know, like for an hour and a half, just
did not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My wife came home from work. She worked late and she's like, What did you do? And I'm like, I moved the cars over. She's like, How did you do that? It took me like an hour and a half.
You could have done two like sideways in there, probably been easier.
I tried, because I don't have a pillar or anything in the middle.
Yeah.
But the Plymouth, the 55 Plymouth, is 17 feet long.
Okay.
And that takes up, like, most of the space. So, I don't know. I did a little back-of-the-envelope sketch, and I squeezed all four. So, I got the Volvo, the 47 Chevy, the 55 Plymouth, and the 99 Tahoe Limited, Super Tahoe, as it's been dubbed. Thanks. And the reason Super Tahoe's in there, I drove that last winter, and it was my daily driver. But had a little transmission slippy slip.
And were you having some issues the last time we did a show and talked about it?
I was, but I kept that from you.
Oh, okay.
Because Regan was also
with us.
Was
there something else having a problem?
No. No, it was just that. It was
was it missing or something?
No. No, mechanically, motor-wise, it's fine.
Okay.
It's, the trans started slipping in overdrive.
You might have just sent me one of those cryptic messenger messages at like 10:15 one night.
Maybe.
This stupid Tahoe. Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. But here's the thing. I love the vehicle. I hate the 4L60E transmission. And anybody who's owned a GM vehicle or followed GM stuff of late, the 4L60E is great until it's not great. All the old LS Firebird guys, everybody ran them, and eventually you'll have issues with them. And this usually was what happened. So this is the second vehicle I've owned with them, and I've had issues where the trans likes to slip, the converter likes to not stay locked up, and other goofy things. So what's going to happen is I'm either going to throw another trans in it, keep on rocking, or I'm going to put a 6-liter and a 4L80 in it and build it the way I want it, and then actually just go pound the pavement with it. So we'll see. Right now it's just sleeping for the winter. So I am now driving a very new to me 2013 Jeep Patriot Latitude.
Yeah.
With a 5-speed manual, by the way.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
It's a stick. Yeah. All of our Jeeps have been
stick. Is this mom-in-law's old car?
No, this is my wife's car, and before that it was her cousin's.
Okay.
So I bought it from her cousin.
Okay.
And that's when I went to the DMV. Oh, you must have gotten a good deal because that's not worth the sale price. It's worth a lot more. I'm like, shut up. I didn't say that. But then my wife, we actually went to Fort's Toyota of Pekin.
Oh, man.
On the web at toyota-pekin.com.
Sponsor Spotlight, as Dustin says.
That's right.
Sponsor Spotlight.
Sponsor Spotlight. Shout out to our buddy there, Dustin. We have actually been looking at Highlanders for a while. And my mother-in-law had one, and she liked it. And
did not know that.
That's where my wife was like, maybe we should get a Highlander. I'm like, yeah, maybe. We'll look. We'll see. And after test driving a bunch of different vehicles, that's the one we settled on. So you remember the end of Goodfellas?
Kind of.
So you remember when he gets put into a witness protection program, Henry Hill, Ray Liotta's character?
Yeah.
And he's on the porch getting the newspaper in his blue chenille bathrobe, and there's sprinklers going. He's like, I'm just a nobody. I'm just an average person, you know? Yeah. And like in the driveway, they do a long shot. The paper boy throws a paper, and the long shot is like it's a Crown Victoria or a Country Squire station wagon in the driveway.
Don't put the Highlander in this picture.
I'm not saying that's how I feel about the Highlander, but I feel like there's a certain part of me that is like practicality is sexy. You know what I'm saying? And this sounds so wrong because a lot of my car buddies are like, so what do you look at? You know, you're looking at like an EcoBoost Ford, or you're looking at something with turbos, you're looking for this, and I'm like, no, I'm looking for something I can get in.
Yeah.
I can take a road trip. I'm comfortable and I don't have to worry about it. That's what I'm looking for. So I say that to say this. Great car. Love it so far. We put about 200 miles on it and we did buy a brand new one.
Yeah.
So it's 2019. Wanted something with a warranty because I've got enough vehicles to work on. So it's been great. The folks there, Rich over at Ford's took really good care of us.
He's a good dude.
Wonderful place to do business with. And I'll say too, after just test driving a couple places in town, locally and things like that, I never once felt pressured. Everybody still has the stereotype like, oh, the car dealer. Oh, dealer. I hate buying cars. Every single place. I mean, we went to 4 different dealerships and just looked around just at what was on the used lot, new lot. Every one of them, super cool. No pressure, no follow-up weirdness, no, like, everybody was cool. So get out there. If anybody's debating, like, taking a look at something or they want to drive or do their stuff online, it's totally your prerogative. But there's some good local businesses out there, Forts being one of them, where you can go in and say, here's what I need. And they'll find you what you're looking for, and they'll help guide your decision without being pressured. And it was a great experience. So
It's too competitive anymore, and Google reviews matter, and Facebook reviews matter.
Yes.
I was in the Verizon store in Pekin here this last week, and they've remodeled, and now so they have like the Apple store set up where they have like the big tables
in
the booths and it just with chairs and outlets on them. And so you have your store employees working with the customers right there at the big table. And I'm like, this is going to be our dealership in about 10 years. People don't know this yet.
Yeah.
But that's what's going to happen.
All right.
You know, we were talking to George Barris a while back, you know, about you don't have one or two cars on the showroom floor or whatever, but you're going to basically sit down with your consultant who's going to be just a salaried employee who's an expert on the product like my Verizon person. And It's going to be no pressure. It's going to be, you know, what do you want? And we're here to sell, you know, we're here for you to buy a car. That's what it is, right?
It was way different. Even 10, 15 years ago, buying a car was way, way different.
Now, so. I think if you're like a used car lot and you're desperate for everybody who walks in there and you don't have the big ticket sitting out front with the sign, yeah, you probably are a whole different level of pressure.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was very, very pleased. All right. Is it time to take a look at headlines?
Headlines. And our new favorite section of the show. This week in social media, like to call it TWISM.
TWISM.
All right.
What's happening in social media?
Well, I got a couple things. So let's start with the one that I post on Facebook. I actually put this in the Central Illinois Automotive page. It was the ordinance violation question. I heard the other day, if you get pulled over in North Beacon, and that's an example of a community. There could be other communities doing this as well. And you get a speeding ticket. Well, you don't actually get a speeding ticket. You get an ordinance violation, which leads me to the question. If it's an ordinance violation, does it actually go against my record?
As opposed to a moving violation, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, well, no, it's not considered
it's not traffic.
It's not a traffic violation. It's an ordinance. So it's a community violation. It's not a.
So it doesn't go on your record.
Well, so everybody was back and forth on this saying, oh no, it'll count. But how can it if it's an ordinance violation?
I don't, if it would have to be traffic because that's what's tied to your.
I don't know.
Driver's license. So, we need to get some advice on this.
Did you read that whole thread? Because a lot of people were saying that the reason they do an ordinance violation is so that way the state can't put their hands into that money.
Right.
The minute they write a speeding ticket, then they only get a small portion of that ticket, whereas an ordinance violation goes 100% to the city of North Beacon.
Right. And I think there's also some tiebacks to staffing and overtime pay and stuff for targeted saturation patrols. Traffic, you know,
that
I was here like
very, very detailed there. Darryl.
Well, no, like for you know, everyone, 4th of July coming up, New Year's, New Year's Eve, don't drive drunk. Cops will be out in full force. And you see everybody, you know, roadblocks and stuff like that. Well, the state is picking up some of that money and funneling it to local law enforcement municipalities to pay the cops overtime. So some of that money has to, I'm sure.
But if they're getting ordinance violations and they're not writing speeding tickets, does the state go, you know what, you haven't given us enough money, so we're not going to backfeed you that money.
Exactly. That's kind of where I was getting at, was I think some of that money from traffic violations goes back to the state to support things like that, targeted seatbelt enforcement or distracted driving month or whatever. So if they're not getting the revenue from that and it's all going to, you know, North Pekin or Marquette Heights or wherever.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, maybe they look at the numbers like, you guys didn't bring in that many. I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know. It's weird. It's like in the Boy Scouts, we don't sell enough popcorn. The council's like, we're not going to recruit for you. You know,
seriously?
Oh, yeah. Same type of thing. So
that's harsh, man. Those are kids.
They don't care. It's all about the money, Daryl.
Look, sell more popcorn or Christmas wreaths. Got it.
We're going to bring more girls into this organization.
break your kneecaps.
But
that is interesting, though.
I don't know. I think this is a slippery slope, and we talk about this type of these little incremental changes and how does it change the nature of the business. And I think if everybody starts doing ordinance violations, what happens is it turn into like that Chevy Chase movie with Dan Aykroyd as the weird judge in New Jersey.
Nothing but trouble.
Yeah. Do you get like thrown in a kangaroo court, you know, because you had an ordinance violation?
Yeah.
Hey, you came through our town. You didn't have a headlight and there's an ordinance violation. You need to come see the judge right now, you know. Yeah,
stay the night in jail.
Yeah.
See, that stuff is shady. And I know that there's money on the table. And let's face it, there are people out there who do violate the law.
Yeah, that's what people are like. Well, then don't speed. Well, the whole point of laws is for equal and equitable treatment of everybody.
Right.
We're not supposed to have unfair and unbalanced rules, you know. So if we have a state law, it should be the whole state. I don't need different laws of Marquette Heights or Pekin, you know. I mean, granted, it is a lesser fine. Wink, wink, you know, it's a better deal.
Yeah.
But still.
That, in a lot of cases, those are funds that are being used to shore up revenue shortfalls caused by something else.
Don't care.
Yeah. Well, I do because that's a solution to a problem that didn't need a solution. You know, like I'm not saying this right. It's the wrong solution to a different problem.
Yeah, well sure.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well sure, yeah. I mean
if the problem is you don't make enough money, maybe you need to raise taxes. Oh, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to up the registration fee. Some places used to do.
Marquette Heights has that tag fee.
Village stickers. That's what I was going with. Every suburb I grew up with.
Did it?
It was, oh, yeah.
I'd never heard of such a thing.
Lindenhurst, every year you had to buy.
We're back.
That's scary. The town I grew up in, town I grew up with every year, $100 sticker you had to buy.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things. If you didn't have it, you got a $30 fine. It was stupid. So, I don't know. Maybe they need some money.
We'll keep an eye on this. That's live, local, and late-breaking Throwing Wrenches news there.
Twism.
All right. Now, Daryl, you've been posting screenshots to me about
yeah.
Since you are a new Highlander owner.
Proud new owner, yeah.
You use Facebook like all new owners' vehicles and just want to just see what the crowd's doing with their Highlanders. Right?
I just like to connect with people, Eric. I have a void in my soul that is not filled by ordnance tickets.
Yeah.
And instead, I tried to do things like join the Toyota Highlanders Owners Club group on Facebook. And I'll just say this. It's been nice because you get to see some of the mods people do, or not that we're doing that, but
yeah.
You know, hey, you know, what type of WeatherTech cargo mats do you have? Or I don't know. I just like learning some stuff.
Sure.
But this is going to end badly for everybody involved because I think like the third day we had the thing, I got on this group. And of course I do like the introductory, you know, rules. Introduce yourself.
Hey, my name's Daryl.
Yeah. So I took like
this. Did you say you're a podcaster?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. And I might not have said my name is Daryl, but I might have a fake profile. Anyways, there's a lot of people in these groups I found, this one in particular, that can't read a manual.
What?
They don't read an owner's manual. They don't read, I don't know, the names on the buttons on the dash of their own vehicle. What's this button do? How come this?
The snow button.
What's the snow button do? It's really like a waste, and the dealer is like trying to rip me off all the time. 27 posts, 27 replies on a post of people complaining about the odor of a foam console insert from Amazon. That's right. The odor, Eric. I'm super sensitive to odors. Well, then don't put weird aftermarket pieces in your car. Maybe try that.
From China.
Yeah. People updating photos. This dude took a picture of his dipstick, said, I noticed a weird smell. Took the car to a mechanic to have him work, get it ready for winter. Took the car in, and then when I got it out, I smelled a weird maple syrup smell. So he pulls the dipstick out and takes a picture of oil running backwards down his dipstick.
Yeah.
And is like, what's wrong with my engine? To quote the great William Shatner on Saturday Night Live, where he's talking to all his Trekkies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, look, get a life.
Get a life.
Get a life, people. That's kind of what I want to do here. I'm sure it's a good meaning group, but, dude, read the manual, get a clue. I had one guy direct message me on Facebook.
Oh.
Right after I did my introductory post. Hey, my wife and I just bought this 2019 XLE, really happy with it, blah, blah, blah. Learning, you know, want to look forward to meeting people. That's fine.
So you had a guy reach out to you.
So, yeah, a guy reaches out and messages me shortly after my introductory post, and he's like, how much did you pay MSRP or under, like, exact figures? It would be helpful. And I replied to him. I said, I paid a competitive price. I said, talk to your local dealer. I'm sure they could set you up. And then that shut him up. Then he was in a couple other posts.
Yeah.
So these people are sniffing for, like, year-end deals, and they're, like, all about it. And I'm like, what happened to the art of negotiating your own thing? Do people come in right now like
– No, that's what Carvana's for, man. It negotiates for you. That's what that guy should do. Or just get the Costco discount and not worry about it. I don't know why people waste so many brain cells.
It's stupid. Don't people have other things to worry about than
Don't buy the Highlander then. You know.
Go buy a
Equinox. Kia. Got a hell of a deal down the road. Just go get that thing.
Dude, new Silverados were like $15,000 off MSRP, and they're still full at the dealership. And I'm like, you are cutting your MSRP by $15,000 and still can't move them.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Anyway. Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some other stuff here. Social media.
In this week in social media, Twism. I did post a video on the – well, I also posted this on the Central Illinois Automotive page as well. It was an FJ Cruiser that locked up its brakes temporarily or briefly on I-55. And then I don't know what the thing was that hit him, but somebody was falling too close and they slammed into the rear of the car and they spun out. And when I first saw this video, actually, I was clued into this thing at first because through Facebook, I'm in the Chicago FJs group.
Oh, yeah.
And so somebody had posted a picture of that vehicle on its side like a week before and goes, you on here, bro? You know,
one of those.
And everybody's like, oh, man, what happened? Blah, blah. I had to guess. You know, everybody's speculating. Well, then that video comes out where a semi was going beside him when it all happened, when he got rear-ended and he flipped and all that stuff. But I got to be honest with you. When I first watched the video, I was sure it was this guy's fault. I thought they'd been playing cat and mouse. The guy was being a jerk. He probably slammed on his brakes. That guy was too close. And karma. Man, karma caught up with this guy. And come to find out, if you watch that video really close, you can see the Honda up probably 30 or 40 yards ahead of him. And he was at a safe distance, throwing its brakes. He threw on his brakes, probably a little too hard, but the guy behind him was far too close and just slammed into him.
No time to stop.
Nope. So watch that video. It's actually very interesting. And I'm sure you'll have the first knee-jerk reaction I did, where the guy was just being a douchebag.
What a jerk. Especially after our discussion about road rage on the last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great one. You should listen to that.
The Regan Show.
The Regan Show. Little talk about road rage and why it's bad.
All right. Time to get out my guitar. We're on to the next section of the show. International news. Ding, 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 ding.
Is that our international theme?
I think so.
Oh, that's you playing the guitar.
Yeah. Whoa.
Nicely done.
Yeah. All right. So we got, I think the first, we got tons of international news, so I'm going to jump right into this right now.
Okay.
California said on Monday it's going to halt all purchases of new cars for state fleet vehicles from GM, Toyota, and Fiat Chrysler. Those automakers are backing Donald Trump in their battle to strip the authority of tailpipe emissions from California. I don't know how they're backing Donald Trump. I have no idea if anybody from Toyota, Fiat Chrysler, and GM is actually sitting there going, yeah, California, you need to do what Donald Trump says.
Wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Wearing a MAGA hat.
Yeah, MAGA. But anyway, between 2016 and 2018, California purchased 58.6 million vehicles from General Motors, almost $56 million from Fiat Chrysler, and $10 million from Toyota, and $9 million from Nissan. Interesting story we'll keep an eye on. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Trump tariffs here in a second.
And I feel that's a lot of money. I'm sure they go through the purchasing cycle and stuff like that. It seems like state cars now, state agencies, have nicer vehicles. I remember as a kid, they were still driving around like 70s Grand Furies and garbage.
Well, getting back to that Marquette Heights cop, he's driving around a Suburban all the time. You know, yeah. He lets it just run on gas all the time. Like, you should be driving a Prius, dude.
Yeah. You should get a RAV4 hybrid or something. Or
I'm tired of this. I'm tired of seeing that Suburban sitting there choking on gas. Well, the other thing, getting back to that article, well, if you're blocking off GM, you're blocking off Fiat Chrysler and Nissan and Toyota, what does this mean? Ford is going to sell 100 million more cars in California next year?
Probably not.
Yeah, so what are they going to do? They realistically can't stop buying cars from General Motors and Fiat Chrysler if they're buying $100 million in cars.
That's a lot.
Good luck finding a supply chain to fill that void.
Right, and get them a competitive
price.
Maybe
they'll buy all Teslas.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Your move, California. Anyways. You want to talk about pistons?
Yeah, I'm talking about pistons.
Stuff?
Yeah.
This was a neat article you found on, was it Reuters?
Yeah. This was through the NADA. But it was basically going through the NAFTA. Do you want to read through this thing?
Sure. Long before the pistons for General Motors V6 engines reached the automaker's plant near Detroit in Romulus, Michigan, they're seasoned international travelers. That's right. Powdered aluminum from Tennessee is then shipped to Pennsylvania. It's forged at some high temperatures into connecting rods for the pistons, and then they're sent to Canada. They're shaped and polished there. Then they ship them to Mexico. Sub-assembly happens there, and then the finished pistons are loaded onto trucks bound for Romulus to become part of the GM V6 engines they make there. The parts make four international border crossings in all without a single tariff levied. So the issue comes back to tariffs and the impact on cost for not only the manufacturers but also for the consumer in the end.
Yeah.
Because let's all face it, a lot of people aren't going to just eat the cost of some of this stuff.
Here's my big thing. We talk a lot about the North America Free Trade Agreement. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, Canada, Mexico stealing our jobs. But let's be real honest here right now. When they talk about these pistons going from Tennessee to Romulus, back down to Mexico, back to Canada – if you were to take out the North American Free Trade Agreement, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, I'm not a senator by any means. I'm not a trade expert, Daryl. I may portray one on this podcast.
You know Jack Kennedy.
Yeah. I've known Jack Kennedy. Anyway.
He's a friend of mine.
Let's just pretend that you were to throw some tariffs up here and you were to say, well, we're going to start blocking, you know, we're start charging Mexico, we're start charging Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happened with all these pistons?
They disappear?
They'd all go to Mexico or Brazil. That's what would happen. And they'd all make one tariff on the stop in, and that'd be it, I believe.
I think you have a very good point. Yeah. And years ago, GM did some of that. They did some of their sub-assembly of engines, long blocks and stuff in Brazil for like the Pontiac Sunbird, the overhead cam motors and stuff like that.
Quad 4?
No, it was made here in America. It was made in Lansing. But no, that thing, I tell you what, anybody who thinks buying an American car nowadays is 100% American is still like living on another planet.
Yeah. This might be our new catchphrase of the show.
Yeah.
Your car's not built in America. Righteous podcast.
You're not American. Well, that's the other thing too, buying a Highlander. The things, you know, oh, it's a Toyota. So you're buying a Japanese car. I'm like, yeah, sort of, but it's made in Princeton, Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more American than, and by the way, that's not sold in a lot of the markets overseas.
No, that vehicle's a U.S. vehicle.
It's too big.
Yeah, they don't take those overseas. Well, I think the sticker on the side of your car when you bought it probably told you 80% materials United States originated and 20% probably transmission Japanese.
Yes. Yeah, so when you go and buy like anything with a GM V6, you're buying a Cadillac STS or something. It's got the 3.5 or 3.6 in it. You look at the little sticker on your side of your Cadillac. Oh, this is an American car made in Detroit. Yeah, about that. So. Yeah. Anyway,
good article. Check that. We'll put a link to that. That's at Reuters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this next article, and this I'm going to keep this in international news because millennials, they cover the whole globe, right, Daryl?
Are they a plague? No, I'm kidding.
Like that. No, that's boomers, Daryl. That's
boomers. Okay, boomer.
Yeah. Millennials want to own their own vehicles, this survey says. While there may be a perception that millennials are uninterested in having a vehicle, a new study proclaims that most of them want their own transportation. Duff and Phelps, you know Duff and Phelps.
Yeah, it's like Seals and Cross, but worse.
But they do a lot of surveys. They surveyed 2,150 millennials and found 75% intend to lease a vehicle purchase or lease within the next 5 years. I just want to know what you promised those 2,100 millennials. Did they all get like a IKEA gift card or okay, something like that?
Everybody gets free avocado toast for life. Just kidding. It was chia seed pudding.
Yeah, we want honest answers. Yeah, this is according to Ward's Auto, by the way.
It does.
Duff and Phelps.
Duff and Phelps.
I think we should change our name. Throwing wrenches with Duff and Phelps.
Duff and Phelps. That's, what is that? That Phantom Works. What's the British show with the two guys that fix cars?
I don't know. It's not as good as Duff and Phelps, though.
Gear grinders. I don't know what the hell they're called.
Yeah.
Anyways, great name, Duff and Phelps. So this does go against what we've been told for about the last 10 years.
Contrary to everything over the last year we've been doing the show, Daryl.
It is. I still wonder, though, if those numbers are 100% accurate, if you would duplicate that survey nationwide if you did it again, or even globally. And I wonder if Uber and Lyft in some of the major metro areas hasn't skewed the statistics, because I think as the millennial generation ages, and I'm on the cusp, I'm on the tail end of that Gen X crowd, but I think as millennials age, they're realizing there's a lot more freedom in having your own stuff, whether that's cars, homes. You know, we hear that too. Millennials aren't buying homes, and then all of a sudden it's like they're starting to buy homes. Well, duh, yeah. As people get older, that's what happens.
Yeah.
So does that mean that they were maybe late adopters, or they were going to sit back and kind of see how things shook out? There's been a lot of change, not only in, everyday life, but in cars, in loans, in credit, and all that stuff.
And Uber and Lyft standards.
Yes, definitely. They've plummeted. definitely fun to follow the numbers. I'll be curious to see what happens to the generation coming up after them, because millennials, we still think of millennials when we hear a news article, millennials surveyed, da da da. We still think, oh, that's cute. They're like 18 to 25 or whatever. No, these are people now having their second and third kid. They're on their second or third house.
Hey, I've said this before. You know, I was talking to a customer the other day. He goes, you know, I never really saw the value of coming to the dealership. And I'm like, yeah, but until you had kids and you had a wife and you know that you want to talk to somebody other end of the phone, that when you have a problem, you want to make sure it's getting handled.
Yes.
It's the same thing I never had a plumber. You know, I never had a steady plumber. I never had a steady electrical guy or my heating and cooling guy. But once you have those guys and you have responsibilities outside yourself that you can't fix,
yep,
you certainly value having an expert, you know, in your pocket, right?
So way to go, millennials. Now start buying some hobbyist cars, and I'll probably start selling some of mine.
And he'll buy you a Coke.
That's right.
All right. Let's move on to national news. And
Do we have a theme song?
No, I don't. No? I just about jumped into one, but I'm not pandering to the truck show podcast crowd. Sorry.
We'll put something in there in post.
Sorry, Don. Sorry, Mike. It's not going to happen.
Oh, man. All right. Back to California.
Yeah.
We're going back to California. California, 22 other U.S. states filed lawsuits recently here to challenge the Trump administration's decision to revoke California's authority to set stiff vehicle tailpipe emissions rules and require a rising number of zero emissions vehicles, or ZEVs. A lawsuit filed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia seeks to overturn the EPA's decision in September of 2019 to revoke portions of a waiver that granted in 2013 to California and some others. So a lot of people see the stickers on cars. Subaru, Honda's been big with this.
ZEV. I'm sure.
Yeah, the ZEV or PZEV.
I got a ZEV up there in my garage.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So that was became kind of a selling point, but it was also a mandate, if I recall correctly.
Well,
California.
Well, California's always been really thick on their emissions. I mean, Massachusetts and California, for all the years I was selling and working on cars, they had whole different exhausts in those cars, and
yeah,
it's always been that way. So this whole thing where Trump is, I don't even understand why Trump's going at him. It makes no sense, but I think it's just a matter of a peeing match, as we called it in the past.
Sure.
And we're going to continue to monitor this story because I'm interested to see. What is the net benefit for the Trump administration other than saying, hey, we're bigger than you, California?
Is it red meat? Is it one of those like, hey, a state shouldn't be able to just, you know, determine, I don't know.
Maybe.
Determine what you're able to sell.
Were California people so freaked out that they had to buy these cars? I mean, realistically, if you go to Los Angeles or San Diego and you see the cars and you saw the smog.
Yeah,
you know, even Houston needs to have ZEV cars all over that place.
Houston,
it's
I think
disgusting.
Phoenix, I think, is the same way. Isn't there a mountain range
and
there?
And Albuquerque is the same way, I believe. Yeah, I mean, this just has to be done. So if those communities want to do it, I don't care. Not my problem. So
it doesn't matter. And realistically, I think 20, 30 years ago, when you bought a car, if you bought a car that didn't have California emissions and then tried to move it in there, it was a big ordeal. Or if you bought a car and you wanted California emissions, it was an option, right? They would actually charge an extra line item on the sticker. Like, oh, yeah, this has got California emissions. There's a $500 package.
Yep.
Nowadays, they're all coming with it. Everybody's adopted it. Right?
I have an idea, though, Daryl.
What's that?
What if I were to take a car from the 1960s and modernize it?
Yeah.
I could avoid all those criteria.
You certainly could. And it would cost you eight times as much. And it's still a 62 Rambler.
And I'm going to go out with Kevin Hart and we're going to have some fun.
Do some smoky burnouts on the I-405. I'm sorry. They just call it the 405.
Yeah.
That's a very California thing too, by the way. The interstates. Here it's like, I was on I-74, I was on 74, I was on 55. Out there, they're like, yeah, I was on the 405 or I was on the...
I don't know. I guess if you say so, Daryl.
They do.
You know,
someone
just,
can correct me
I was
on
just
this.
Out in California, but we didn't talk like that.
No?
No.
No way, bro.
No, we said, was you got any Russian River? Yeah, I got some Russian River. All right, let's do it.
That's a Pliny.
All right, so now tell me about another car maker that isn't Rivian that's building electric trucks, Daryl.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to the heartland because we're in national news here. We're going to go right here to the breadbasket of Lordstown, Ohio. A quaint.
Where is Lordstown?
Lordstown is go to Youngstown and then go south,
okay,
and then keep going.
It's still not helping, but okay. All right.
It's about an hour from Pittsburgh, if
okay.
I recall.
All right, that helps
okay.
me.
Right. That helps
I,
you a little
I can
bit.
Work with that.
Geography. And so Lordstown actually was that plant there was a GM plant built in the 60s to build some after the General Motors Assembly Division, where they started basically a Chevy as a Pontiac, as a Buick, as an Olds, as a whatever. They started making full-size cars there in 65, 6, something like that, or maybe even earlier. After that, it became the plant where the Vegas and Monzas were built, and then the Cavaliers and Sunbirds, all the J-body stuff.
No
then,
wonder you know so much about this place.
I am obsessed with this plant. I actually taken a tour of it. They built the Cobalts, and then most recently the Cruze. And the Cruze was actually a decent car. Guess what? Nobody wanted it, and GM stopped making it. So now they have this huge plant that's sitting idle, And a pretty decent workforce there for decades with nothing to do. Well, the shuttered factory in Lordstown, it's been at the center of the company's tension with President Trump. Here, all these articles they keep referring to. This is in The Verge, by the way.
Yeah.
Keep referring to trouble with Trump.
Trump, yeah, he's starting it all.
Sure. It had nothing to do with the fact that it's an empty factory in your town.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah.
An electric vehicle startup there called Lordstown Motors has purchased the plant. It was a deal that was finalized last week, so early, mid-November. It could bring hundreds or thousands of jobs, speculators say, to the region again. And the new purpose is going to be a hub for EV manufacturing in Ohio. Steve Burns, the guy is a founder and former CEO of a struggling electric vehicle startup company called Workhorse.
Workhorse.
Workhorse. Sounds like something you buy at, like, Harbor Freight.
Or Toys R Us.
Apparently, he made electric delivery vans in the past. Never heard of him.
Yeah.
And he's going to be doing some stuff for the Postal Service's next-generation vehicle. Although we also saw Rivian and Amazon are going to be doing some stuff for delivery vehicles.
Who knows?
Yeah. Startup lost $38 million this year and generated just $4,258 in sales.
T-shirts.
So I'm feeling the love here, Eric. Are you?
Lordstown T-shirts is what they were selling for $4,200. Yeah, I can't believe they could have said generated negligible returns.
Yeah.
They could have said.
No, they have it down to the penny. They got this guy's number. Guys made no money. They got him clocked. Anyways, I think electric vehicles are where it's going to be at. I mean, we've talked before. I mean, what do you think? Is that a market segment that just is
the EV trucks?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is with EV trucks, and Rivian sent a postcard from the Andes here last week. I got it in my email. Do you get that?
No.
Anyway, so they're out driving around South America with their Rivian truck, which that's phenomenal, whatever. But here's my deal. If you're building these trucks and Amazon's selling them and I can, you know, get them all over the country and get them delivered next day with Prime, I guess what I'm going to be worried about is if I own this truck for a year or two, or if I'm going to lease on it for 3 or 4 years, when I have a problem, where am I going? Am I calling Amazon? You know, right. Is an Amazon guy coming out fixing it? Or do I got to call the Lordstown factory? And does Lordstown have a service center near me? Probably not. This is the complete gambit these companies have been running, whether it's Rivian or whether it's the Lordstown company. They have no dealer network. And I'm not trying to overvalue that. I know I work at a dealership, and that's like I was talking about earlier with the Verizon store. I think the way that we sell cars is going to change. The way we service cars is going to change, especially with electric cars. Less maintenance. It's going to be a less intense process. But there's no supply network. There's no parts depots. There's nothing.
Right.
And you're going to rely on Amazon's infrastructure or something like that, you know, when you have a problem.
Does some of that have to do with the throwaway mentality and being an electric appliance, if you will? Some of these vehicles are like, well, that doesn't work. Just throw it away or you get new one.
Well, I really do believe that electric cars have a lot of that aspect in them. I mean, just like we talked early on in the series of the shows here, I compare a Tesla to an iPhone, you know, and you could make that car obsolete with software updates and just say, we're not supporting this car anymore.
Right.
Well, manufacturers have to support supply chains for 10 years after a car is produced. Are these electric manufacturers going to be held to the same regard?
A lot of open-ended questions there.
That's what I do, Daryl. Thorough and thought-provoking questions.
I think you should run a 60-minute show.
I'm Andy Rooney.
Call it
I'm Eric Stahl, I'm a crotchety old man.
You ever notice how electric pickups don't exist?
Yeah.
Anyways, we're looking forward to seeing some models there, and hopefully that does happen. Throughout the Midwest, and I say the Midwest because I am a big supporter of Rust Belt cities.
Yeah, no, please use the infrastructure.
Right. I'm glad to see Rivian go into that place in Normal. Places like Lordstown, places like Janesville, Wisconsin, places like Wentzville, Missouri, they all need some help. And if you have a place like GM or Ford or, you know, Chrysler that's been a big staple of the community and put food on the table for decades and it suddenly goes away, what's next? Hopefully something like this is the next iteration of what could be a viable industry. We'll see.
Yeah. Back to Wentzville. Leave the Memphis Blues behind.
That's right. That's right.
All right. We did talk a little bit earlier about the, as far as very hyper-local news. Make sure you check out that episode with George Barris and also check out that blog post with the pictures from the local Pekin car dealerships.
Definitely.
If we could do any more shows like that, I don't care if you don't like them or not. We are definitely going to suck up those opportunities.
We're just going to do them.
Yeah. Don't care. Well, I learned so much in that show and just the experience of talking to George and seeing the pictures of those stores and really just painting a picture that we don't get to see anymore. You know, you go to the movies for this stuff.
That's right. I had a couple good text conversations with people who listened and even the picture with you and me and George, you know, right after we recorded, like, hey, we're going to have this episode out. People came out of the woodwork. Hey, I used to know him, or hey, my cousin sold for him, or this guy, I know his cousin and he was my neighbor. Like, everybody knew George Barris.
Oh, yeah, everybody
still
does.
Yeah. The guy's been out of the car industry for what, 30 years?
Oh, no. He stopped selling probably 10 years ago.
So that's right.
He was working for Velde, yeah.
Velde.
And he was there up till like 10 years ago.
Okay. So
there's a couple of guys like him who were just, they could just sell cars just walking in the door. talk to my buddy George. You know, George sold the whole family cars. I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be. A trusted professional that on a Saturday night, when something goes down, who you calling?
Yeah.
George, I need help.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway.
Fix it.
Amazon support. This is Svengali.
This is your call is important to us.
Yeah,
please stay on the line.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, one last thing here. Now, this would be local. What do you got here?
Well, this is somewhat national slash local. Everybody, of course, big buzz about the mid-engine C8 Corvette this week.
Is that coming out?
Yeah, there's a car called the Corvette, Eric. It's very interesting. And they took the motor and they put it in the wrong place.
You don't say.
No, they did. Motor Trend Car of the Year just got that award this week.
That's cool.
Very prestigious. Glad to hear that. A lot of us here in Central Illinois have not seen a C8 yet.
I saw it at SEMA.
Did you?
I did.
Really?
Yeah, oh, that's cool. I saw three of them. Unfortunately, I hate to sidetrack on this.
No, go for it.
Well, anyway, at SEMA, they had three of them. GM had a giant display. Giant. I can tell you Toyota had a giant display, but they had 20 Supers on it.
Yeah.
GM had three C8s. One of them was a race car. The other two were factory production cars.
Yeah.
And there were so many people swamped all over them, you couldn't get a clean shot of any of those things or even take a look. I couldn't even get close up, just even look inside to see what it looked like without having, like, elbow guys. I'm like...
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah, they had a whole area of just crate motors, which, that's cool. I guess it is SEMA and people are buying accessories, stuff like that.
Sure.
But we're all there for the C8. I mean, for God's sakes, get 10 C8s and put them
out. Get
a
couple more, even if you got to get some pre-production models or something.
Yeah.
I don't know how many they are making this year. I think I could probably Google that. But Upstring Chevrolet, a big Corvette dealer and a huge fan base. They used to put on, I don't think they do it anymore, but they used to put on a really great car show in the summer at Upstring there in Washington.
Jerry's been known as a vet guy for years.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a nice collection there. Friday, December 6th, they're going to have an unveiling, a local unveiling, if you will, of the C8. So if you didn't make it to SEMA or you're not going to hit up the Chicago Auto Show here in February, bring your drool buckets.
Easy for you to say
that, yeah. Bring your kids, bring your wife, bring everybody, all your friends, and go see a C8 at Upstring if you'd like.
Now, when I posted some pictures of the C8s, there was a couple comments on there. People like, nah, it's not a Corvette. You know, the engine's not in the right spot to be a Corvette. And I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you people really serious?
It's going to get worse.
They're like, oh, you know, it can't even really compete with those supercars, so why'd they do that? I'm like, for God's sakes, you could buy a Camaro with the same setup as the last iteration of the Corvette.
Yeah.
So buy a friggin' Camaro. But the Corvette, the Corvette is the pinnacle performance for General Motors, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So mid-engine design, this car, to me, it looked very nice from what I saw, and I think it's going to perform great, and I think it's a decent price. It can be modded out.
Yeah.
But I did see the haters, and I'm telling you right now, there's going to be hashtag not my vet not coming out.
Not my vet.
That's not my vet.
That's going to be a thing. If not, we'll start it just to be jerks, and then we'll follow the trend.
You know, the guys who can't afford the car are the ones, not my vet.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with my Miata. It's front engine, rear wheel drive.
What do you drive? I have an 85 Ford Aerostar.
Yeah. Beretta, Indy 500 edition.
But I choose not to buy a vet. I don't know. I think it's the natural evolution of things, but they're never going to get rid of that. There's that crowd. They're always going to be like, they ruined it. You mean they evolved?
Oh, my God. I can't take it.
Anyways.
Well, we got some more evolving to go on the show here.
Yeah, let's talk about evolution.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Revolution.
Yeah, one quick story in the locals. Yeah. I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to share this or not, but this is in the Peoria New Car Dealer Association. Apparently, last week at a local dealership, a car was stolen in a very sophisticated manner. An individual came into the dealership and wanted to test drive the car. And while they were test driving the car, they had some kind of a pad, probably like the key guys do when they do the key cloning for the dealership. And they cloned the smart key, then came back later that night and stole the car.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the New Car Dealer Association has let all the dealers know what happened, which is great. That's, you know, part of the value there to share knowledge. But this, you know, when we have our video cameras on you and we're asking for your driver's license and you're test driving a car, gee, I wonder why they do that.
Yeah, there's lots of reasons. The stakes are a lot higher, and I know that that's a sophisticated way to steal a car.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not talking about the days of smash and grab or hot wiring
or wax or clay that you smash against the key and then go home and file a key.
Right.
I mean, that was what the owner of the dealership, younger Pat Fort, said to me. He goes, you know, I remember guys would do that too. I'm like, dude, nobody's done that in forever.
No.
But this is the next version of that.
That's pretty scary. Have you followed some of the trends, people buying Faraday boxes for their keys?
No, what's that?
And their fobs. So a lot of the cars with keyless entry, of course, they got like rolling codes, like your garage door opener stuff. But they put, so people can't steal it. It's almost like the, the wallets with the foil in it. They put this little box. It's called a Faraday cage, Faraday shield. And it prevents any kind of radio signal transmission in and out.
Ah.
So there's people that, like, first thing they do in the morning is they get their keys out of their Faraday box. I mean, it's not like doomsday kind of stuff, but it almost is.
I thought about selling Faraday boxes for cell phones.
Yeah?
Maybe people could just put them in their Faraday box every night and just walk away. And
that's not a bad idea.
All right, Darryl, we'll work on that later.
Okay, all right.
That'd be throwing wrenches, original product in the gift store.
We'll CNC machine it out of some space-age polymer. I don't know.
Darryl, are you ready for this? It's been a while.
It has been a while. We did one last time, but I think
it was weak.
We're ready to get into the meat of it. Let's do it.
All right, so it is time for your Moment of Muscat. All right.
Wow.
Well, the tweet went out this week. Congratulations on the Mach-E. Sustainable/electric vehicles are the future, Elon Musk tweeted. Excited to see the announcement from Ford, as it will encourage other car makers to go electric too. Well, Elon posted that after Ford posted some pictures of the new Mustang Mach-E SUV, Challenger to Tesla, so they say. It was a great ceremony featuring the appearance of actor Idris Elba, because he's a great Mustang fan, as we all know. I did enjoy him in that Kate Winslet movie where they, like, got in the plane crash and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Mountain Between Us or whatever.
Pretty good.
Anyway, I don't think there was any electric cars in that. The car's going to cost between $43,000 and $60,000 and contain various Tesla-like features, such as a frunk and keyless activation, so owners can start their cars using their app on the smartphone. And that is your Moment of Muskrat!
Well done. Well done.
I'm telling you what, I was really happy about this segment because this Mustang is not a Mustang. This is a Mazda SUV with an electric engine in it. I don't even understand why they slap a Mustang logo on this.
So the Mustang part bothers you?
Yeah.
What about the vehicle itself?
Oh, I think the vehicle's great. It's definitely the shape and the size, and if it's all electric, people are going to buy that. But why slap the pony on the front of this thing? It's not a pony car.
I think it's a marketing mistake. Brian Rob Davis, who runs the Malaise Motors Group and website, great guy. He put a thing out there on Facebook earlier today talking about the Mach-E, and he's like, you call it whatever you want. It's a beautiful vehicle. Like, there's a ton of other names they could have drawn up. You could reuse the Mercury or something space age, like something that from Ford's past, but still work it into the future. Just don't call it a Mustang. It's not a Mustang, period.
No.
I happen to think that they're leveraging some of the power behind the name Mustang. And here's what it is. Talk about boomers. I think it's to capture a little bit of that boomer audience who is like, I don't want one of those newfangled. I'm doing a voice that is not indicative of my opinion of people of the baby boomer generation.
But it's the voice you picked.
But it's the voice I picked. But it's like, I don't want one of those electric vehicles. But I like the Mustang. I remember the Mustang. I had a Mustang. Mustangs are cool. Maybe I'll buy one of these Mustang electric vehicles. I don't know. I think it's a marketing mistake, but I think the plan is solid. And to be honest, it's one of the first vehicles I've seen from Ford in a while that isn't a car or a Mustang that looks pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just...
You think it's terrible.
No, I think they should have called it like a Tennessee Walker, or maybe they should have called it a... maybe they should have called it a Percheron or something like that. They could have come with some other horsey names.
Percheron.
Yeah. You know, but it doesn't make any sense. I can't wait for the Harley Davidson edition of this one.
No.
Or the Eddie Bauer edition of it.
The sad thing is, they would sell. They would sell. And you know who they would sell them to?
Boomers.
That's right, baby.
Boomers.
You slap a little tan stripe on the bottom and some Eddie Bauer stitching on the seats.
Yeah, yep.
I am all in.
Yeah, we got the Mustang. Got the Eddie Bauer edition.
Get the
remember the Nautica edition?
The Nautica Villager? Yeah. I love that. That was a Nissan Quest, by the way.
But it was still a Mercury.
It was a cross platform.
Yeah, I remember, but yeah.
Yeah, that was
still
weird.
Nautica edition.
Nautica.
Was there a Tommy Hilfiger edition ever?
There should have been. I know there was an Orvis edition Jeep. There's also some other weird stuff. But yeah, I think if you slapped a, man, I got me thinking. I think we should Photoshop an Eddie Bauer one of these.
That's a great idea.
That is.
Oh, when you say we, you mean me?
I mean, you're the Photoshop dude, so yeah, go ahead and make that happen. Or a Harley Davidson one, but you couldn't supercharge it. Like, it would be supercharged already.
It doesn't matter. It's Harley in spirit, man.
But it wouldn't be loud. Even the Harley trucks are loud.
They could put, like, They can put like some little noisemakers on it, you know.
Kazoos.
Meme, 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 meme.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Ford, nice work. Take it back to the marketing team and don't call it a Mustang. Don't put ponies on it.
Yeah. All right. That's it for that moment of Musk. It was elongated. I knew we were saving that Ford for this part of the show.
Yep.
All right. Now's where we hop into the part of the show where we kind of talk about things that are stuck in our craw. We like to call that the riff zone.
Yeah.
And there was an article by the points guy who I don't know who the points guy is. He could be a Vegas bookie for all I know, but
do you have all your thumbs? Did you come back from Vegas with your thumbs?
Anyway, the headline on this one was when ride hailing services like Uber and Lyft debuted, they were revolutionary in transferring how millions completed ground travel. He used Uber and Lyft for hundreds of rides over the last few years, but his tolerance of these services from booking to the ride completion has reached a limit. He now finds himself using public transportation, renting a car, taking traditional taxis over ride hailing companies almost every trip he takes. Here are the aspects of the experience where he looks elsewhere, and we'll link to that article in the points guy. I got to be honest with you, and this is the first time I've been honest this whole show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but no, yeah. My Lyft ride when I was in Phoenix, that guy barely spoke English, and he was driving a Liberty that I could hear a wheel bearing or something like going out on this thing. And I've had this general complaint with Lyft and Uber over the years. They don't check the cars.
They're supposed to, though.
Yeah, but they do that general first check. You got to do that first certified Lyft or Uber check, and we were one of those facilities for a while, but we aren't anymore. But after that, I don't think there's anything stopping you from just driving that car for the next 2 or 3 years.
See,
with no maintenance.
They also have, I think, a year in mileage restriction.
Oh, they do. But, so,
but that's first time, is what you're saying?
That's fast and loose, too, because I noticed in Boston when I took Lyft one time,
yeah,
that guy was driving a Bonneville. And the Bonneville's been out of production for
2009, at least.
So don't give me. It smelled like an ashtray. So, and it told me the guy was pulling up in a Bonneville. So I'm like, no, wait a
That's
second.
Weird.
This car shouldn't qualify. So,
your Uber's here. I'll be in the Nash 600.
Yeah, I think they just I think they change those standards as they can find driver penetration. You know, we need more drivers. Well, let's just loosen those standards, right?
Maybe.
Now, I will say this on the flip side. I got an Uber Black.
In
Vegas, from our hotel to the airport.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of the best trips I've ever had. I had my technician and my parts guy with me. The guy was cheerful, grabbed our bags, talked to us, found a shortcut and asked if it was okay if you could take the shortcut. I said, yeah, that's fine, man. Whatever gets us there faster.
Yeah.
Totally cool. And that's what it's all about. When a guy drives his own car and respects his own vehicle, it's a nicer car. When he's working for tips, he's going to be more nice to you. He's going to be more conscious. He's going to have mints in the car or whatever.
Sure.
There are reasons that I think that Uber and Lyft are better in some ways. When I've gotten taxis from every airport that I've flown into.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, those guys sometimes say, oh, I can't lift up your bag and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, there's definitely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it depends on the city, too. I mean, Chicago is the worst.
And well, I never get one in Chicago. Well, but I've had Uber and Lyft in Chicago.
And they were fine?
Always been fine. Actually, my kids said one of them was the best ride they've ever had in their lives. A guy in a Honda Accord took us from Wrigleyville down to the Hancock. And
Not bad. No. See, I've had good experiences up there where it was literally a mom driving while her kids were in school. And she was driving a big Honda Odyssey minivan. It was cool. Like you said, there was like bottles of water.
Yeah.
Like she had a cool little DVD playing. Like life was good.
Yeah.
And then another guy was driving a Ford Focus with a broken air conditioner and BO and a busted windshield. So I don't know. This is why I like to drive everywhere. I hate riding in other people's cars that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I also just hate not having any kind of control.
Yeah.
So there's
You know what else I know you hate?
What's that?
Snappy jingles and little character actors on commercials.
Well, that's a perfect segue for my next little Riff Zone segment here, Eric. Who else is tired of Flo from Progressive? Anybody? Show of hands?
I love her. I think she's great.
Do you?
No, not really.
Okay, her real name is Stephanie Courtney.
You got her address and her phone number? Are you really calling her out?
I'm not calling her out. But she is actually, her stand-up is funny. She was a stand-up comedian before she did this stuff. But she's funny at first. Everybody knows that was a great campaign, and it's still running, by the way. But I think it's time for Flo to consider somewhere like Scottsdale. You know, maybe a condo.
Sun City?
Yeah, Sun City, a Del Webb joint, you know, somewhere in the Carolinas, maybe Altamont Springs, Florida. I hear that's nice.
Well, you got some locations picked out for her.
I picked out her final resting place, actually. wherever she goes, I just want her to stop showing up in every aspect of my life, whether it's my Facebook feed, my TV commercials, streaming apps. It doesn't matter where I go. I cannot escape Flo. And if you notice now, by the way, Eric, if you see the Flo commercials, it's Flo's kind of taken a back seat. There's like some little mousy dude.
Yeah.
Who's like Big John or what? I don't know. He's like the claims adjuster guy.
Well, this picture here, she's got like a spare tire around her waist. I mean, she's got a little girth.
Yeah.
I knew she was pregnant when she did some of those commercials, but
maybe this is a,
she's not bouncing back. That's not pregnancy.
Well, but this might be one of those, I don't want the paparazzi to come after me photos.
Well, you think this is a fat suit?
I don't know.
Recognize me with this do-rag and this fat suit on.
I'm on Sunset Strip.
By the way, that's how she talks when she's not in the commercials.
She sounds like a diner waitress from the 1940s. A truck stop. I don't know.
Cream in that?
The special's bacon.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Flo. Ride off into the sunset. Take your little hatchback full of all the sacks of money that you wisely saved on your car insurance and never come back. Progressive, I really want to just shame you for this 5 seconds here. Stop driving this campaign into the ground. Get some new ideas. Even Geico, they ditched the Gecko for like a little bit.
Oh, now they have like the classics. You can watch all the Cavemen. You watch the Gecko. You know,
yeah.
They're terrible. But
Progressive could do that though. They've spent millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on
the scanner. Hey, I'm the scanner for Progressive, you know.
And there's a talking box. Chris Parnell, former SNL alum.
Yeah.
Chris Parnell and Parks, 30 Rock.
Yeah.
He does the voice of the Progressive box. Does Progressive have a box they give you?
Yeah.
It's stupid. The whole thing's
Flo
dumb.
Might have a box. Never mind.
Yeah, she needs to get lost. Cash the checks, move on with your life, Flo. All right.
Well, sorry about that. I'm going to post that picture. I mean, there's some serious body shaming. You're a bully, Daryl.
Is that what I am?
You are a bully.
I don't know about that. I just did a Google image search. That's all I did.
Embarrassing celebrity photos. Oh, I'm going to talk about Flo this week.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Can we get on to Cars of the Week?
W-E-A-K?
Cars of the Week is our, I would say this is our favorite segment of the show. This is where Daryl and I, we cash in all those virtual cyber chips we won at our at Dottie's Gambling Parlor in North Beacon.
What are those places?
I don't know. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
Anyway, we break out the virtual coin, we get out the Bitcoin, we break out the cyber wallets, and then we buy a car that could cost millions of dollars, but generally speaking, is going to cost somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 this week, Daryl.
Not too bad. We got a budget. We're going into holiday season.
Yeah, the wife told me to keep it under control, you know, before Christmas. So,
all right. So, what do you got on the plate here? Yeah. I see a beautifully shot picture of what appears to be a Jeep pickup, Eric.
Yeah, a Jeep pickup. It's a 1989 Jeep Comanche regular cab short bed in Bloomington, Illinois. Found this on Facebook Marketplace. Got 128,000 miles, automatic transmission. It says the body's purple in color, but I guarantee that paint has no clear coat on it, so that purple is probably oxidized red, if I had to guess. It says it's in fair condition, which I have no idea. But here's the deal. It's a 1989. It's a Jeep truck. To me, and then we go back to this all the time. I graduated high school in 89. It seems like your wheelhouse vehicles are always somewhere right around the time you're most influenced when you were 16 or 17 years old. This truck, to me, said truck. Before I ever knew what a Tacoma was or a Toyota truck was, a Jeep Cherokee or this Jeep Comanche, this was rugged outdoorsness. And, even looking at this design right now, this is a 1989. We're in 2019. This truck still has timeless look to it. It's a good-looking truck. The tires and wheels on it aren't out of place in today's age. A 1989 Chevy, the wheels would look like hell. I can guarantee you that. But the grill on this thing, the headlights, just everything about it's cool. So I can pick up this little guy for $1,950 in Bloomington right now on Facebook. And I tell you what, Daryl, if I had the coin and I had the supportive spouse, I would own this truck.
It would be in your driveway right now.
Leaking oil right now.
I was going to say, it's 4-liter inline six, and they were a nice, bulletproof, indestructible drivetrain. Yeah. But, they'd be leaking, and you'd have some general maintenance. I hear the door hinges on these things like to fall off.
Actually, I'm surprised this truck's not sitting like sway back like an old horse because it should have been rusted out. I'm guessing it spent a better part of its life somewhere else before it showed up in Illinois.
Possibly. These things always, I like them as well. We didn't see too many of them. A friend of mine growing up, his dad had one. Had a brown one, and it was the first one. It was probably around the same vintage, maybe a little earlier. And it was on the same chassis as the Cherokee, like the classic Cherokee that everybody grew up with.
Yeah.
And I remember it was the first vehicle I ever saw that had a tow haul button on the dash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was an inline six automatic. And I said, what's that? And I was like, oh, that's when my dad wants to pass somebody. He flips the thing on and it gets like more horsepower. And I was like, well, that's
overdrive
cool.
Overdrive off.
Yeah, basically it's what it was. But they had a great size, and the, them and the original Dodge Dakota were slightly bigger than like the S10 and the Ranger and all the import pickups.
You know, that could be my next car of the week if I find a Dakota convertible.
There you go.
I love those.
Those are rare.
Yeah.
And those used to be worth nothing, and now they're people.
Oh, they got to be worth a fortune now.
They're starting to climb.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had a V8 in them, though.
No, I don't think
they had
so.
Like a little 3.9
V6 or
something.
Who cares? It's a convertible truck with a roll bar.
It's a V8.
No.
They did, anyways.
Style over substance, Daryl.
I guess. Speaking of style.
Yeah, what do you got for us,
bud? I have a stylish block on wheels here that
You broke out the big Bitcoin on this one.
I did. It was sold out from under me. I hemmed and hawed too much. Yeah, it was already sold. But. Also on Facebook Marketplace, I found a 1988 Oldsmobile 98 touring sedan. And if anybody remembers Oldsmobile that time of year, that time of the decade rather, that was the downsized, already went from the big boxy B-body and full-size rear-wheel drive cars to the front-wheel drive. Kind of looks like a little Cadillac of the era. And, but the touring sedan was, you took all the cool parts about the 98 Regency, the C-body chassis, and you gave it sports suspension, I think 16-inch alloy wheels.
What would be the sport suspension on this rig?
Basically just tighter sporty springs, I guess. Bigger sway bars.
Yeah, some links. It actually has like sway bar links.
Yeah, they actually handle pretty good. My mom had an 89 Olds 98 Regency Brougham with the FE3 suspension, and I can attest that car as a 16-year-old was a little rocket ship.
Yeah.
So this thing, 3800 Series 1, bulletproof motor.
Oh, 3800 is a rock-solid engine.
Yeah, and this is before they started using the plastic intakes and all that garbage. So this thing would actually run forever. This was on a local Peoria car lot, and it was a young guy who owns the car lot and says, this is my grandparents' car, always garaged, one owner, 71,000-mile car.
Wow.
Come get it, $3,000. And it was a gorgeous car. Ahead of its time, you had trip computer in it, did all the mileage calculations, had an engine oil life gauge in it, had the hands-free buttons for the climate control, automatic climate control on the steering wheel, everything.
This guy sold this car too cheap.
He did. It was gone within 24 hours.
Ugh.
So there was like a split, you know, second where I'm like, how much do we have in savings? And I got the dagger eyes. I was like, no. The missus was not having it.
I guess I'll move this to cars of the week.
Guess I'm going to just copy and paste this. But beautiful little car. And for $3,000 for something with under 100,000 miles, even if it's old like this, an 88, you know, you might have to put some seals on here or there. But the thing had brand new tires. Interior was beautiful. Leather seats, buckets, console.
Front bench, right?
No. No, oh. Buckets and a console. Oh. No, this thing was...
Not a flip-down console. It actually had real bucket seats.
Real bucket seats, and this almost like a 60s muscle car, kind of a U-handle, like a, not a ratchet shifter. What do you call it? Anyways, cool car. You don't see too many of them. And even for a winter beater, $3,000, I think it was a good price.
Winter beater. You'd put that in. You'd try and fit five cars in the garage.
I would build a new garage just to house that. Be in my living room.
All right. I think that's everything.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. I don't know if it was all good. But we'll get some feedback.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
And I think we did a pretty good job. This is the first time Daryl and I have done a show by ourselves or not with an interview in like, 2 months?
Probably.
So, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed it. We'll try and practice up so we're better. And we're going to try and get that Christmas show out for you this year.
Yeah, there's been a lot of sturm and drama about what we're doing for our Christmas show. We don't have any big grand schemes or anything like that, but I think we could put something together.
Maybe we should get the wives to tell stories.
That might be
terrible.
Terrible idea. I don't know. Maybe not.
We'll figure out something. Don't worry about it. We are creative and we're always working on stuff. Don't forget, make sure you visit our sponsors. Toyota-Pekin.com gets you Forts Toyota Pekin, and CLO Peoria gets you Gabe Casey, our fine lawyer friend in Peoria, Illinois. Make sure to check those guys out. We do appreciate their support. Also, just some post-show here. We are following the fact that Nissans are calling over 400,000 cars for brake fluid leaks, and the cars are bursting into flames on Muranos and some QX60s and some other models, and Maximus, too, so we'll be watching that article. That didn't make the show.
Yikes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Daryl Scott.
I'm Eric Stahl.
We'll see you on Throwing Wrenches. Thanks for listening.
On Auto Podcast 2019.